RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Let's have another Tech Tuesday closing in on the end of the year. Stephen Sykes is with us. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, how you doing?
Not too bad. You've been out at events with Kit?
Yeah, I've done a few more Santa parades. There's coming to the end of them. And the thing I like the most about doing Santa parades is no matter how old or young you are, no matter your ethnic background or anything like that, it's fantastic to see everyone smiling at those sorts of events.
Yeah, that's true.
It's great. It's awesome.
It's because you turn up.
Well, no, I think it's just because of the mood of everyone, and they see it, you know, I guess with Kit, it's a thing of nostalgia, and then...
Yeah, of course it is, yep.
So it brings back memories, and... under the category of reading a room, I can sort of read the crowd, and that's when I go, yep, I think I could rev the engine up here a few times. And
make a call, eh? Yep. I'll freak everybody out.
Yep. And then I usually get cheers and then people saying more. So.
And then they want you to do like those smokies on pedestrian crossings.
Burnouts. Yeah, no, don't do that.
Yeah. All right. Okay, then let's get into first up feedback. Who's been getting in touch and about what?
So Keza has said when we were talking about how to tell if you have been hacked or not, she said it was excellent information, clear and concise, good stuff. So thank you for that.
Oh, good one. There you go.
Yeah. And you'll remember.
Actually, I think I did say that was very well explained.
Oh,
when you explained that, if you remember. Yeah, just like, okay, carry on.
So when we talked about a potential washing machine that was sucking internet for breakfast, somebody wrote in with a gag saying, "My washing machine router gobbling data thinks it's been posting underwear shots on the brown web."
Yeah. Well, if you're doing that with the washing machine, isn't that laundering data?
As opposed to laundering money.
Or clothes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, so far, so good. Carry on.
Yeah. Kelly writes in to say that she's just got hearing aids and she loves them. And they are the basic version that you can get through Bayes Audiology. However, the more expensive versions have...
Well, wait on. What's the basic version? Just as loud? What, 12? You know, those amps that go to 12? Is it just that or...
Well, I was about to tell you.
Oh, sorry, that'll teach me for interrupting, sorry.
However, the more expensive versions have Bluetooth inside, and I did wonder if they also listened to your conversations, as well as frying your brain, just thinking out loud. So I'm not aware of any potential on-the-fly hacks. If anything did exist, they'd only be able to necessarily listen to what you could hear anyway. But
boy, that's a bit scary.
There are some manufacturers that do take this kind of thing kind of seriously, so the likelihood is fairly low. But it'd be interesting to know what brand of hearing aid that Bayes Audiology was selling, because I don't think they design and manufacture their own.
Yeah, they sell them. Yeah.
Yeah, and this last item is. A doozy, and I mean a doozy because it's quite information thick, but I'll paraphrase a lot of it, and I think this might apply to quite a lot of other people who are having battles with smart meters. So this person writes in to say that their particular, I won't name the provider, their power provider tried to force them to have a smart meter with the threat of disconnection when refused. They have a letter explaining that they cannot have a smart meter for health reasons, and their reason is provable, and so would be in the minority of New Zealanders who have a strong medical reason to refuse a smart meter outside of privacy concerns. They write to say that they appealed to the Utilities Commission. They found that despite my genuine health needs and proving their power provider had lied, that the power provider could cut off my power. They complained to the electricity authority about the situation, giving written proof that their power provider had lied to get permission to go into my property, and that this was against the EA regulations. The EA didn't care and stated that their power provider is not allowed to lie to them, but if they lie if they lie to a consumer, it is not covered under regulations. They continue.
Hang on. What?
Yeah.
Okay, I think I heard that correctly. Carry on. Yeah.
So they phoned up. They called out their power provider's bluff and asked when they planned to disconnect so they could move their freezer to someone else's house. Haven't been disconnected yet, but they say they will in 2028 when their meter's compliance will expire and that no one will recertify their existing analog meter. Have tried the meter equipment provider, all electricity companies and the EA. They've stopped manufacturing new analog meters, so no one can have a new one. I cannot get a second-hand meter unless my retailer agrees. I cannot install a meter from overseas. Once the meter certification expires, their power provider or any other electricity retailer cannot legally supply power anymore. If this is not highlighted and the public doesn't demand change, every house will have a smart meter, and since this person generally cannot, will be living without grid connection in the middle of a city.
Wow. The analog meters, they're not being made anywhere or just from suppliers we use, or were they made locally? I don't know.
I don't know if that kind of thing is sort of made in New Zealand anyway, and I imagine that there is a big shift to go to the smart meter. But
yeah, but not everywhere.
Yeah, to me, there's two interconnected issues. There's one, A, having a smart meter, and two, a smart meter that has a communications module in it that can phone home.
Oh, so you can have a non-communicating version.
Yes. That's why a lot of people are being told that the communications module in their smart meter is being removed, taking out the 3G one and a 4G unit's being installed. That's what that's all about. But then a different one is when people have an analog meter and the power companies are wanting to take that entirely and install a smart meter. And the thing, apart from the comms module and the fact that there's the EMF from that and privacy, smart meters introduce dirty electricity in the home wiring, whereas analog meters do not.
When you say dirty electricity, well, not smooth.
Yeah, so
flowing current or something like that.
If you imagine a sinusoidal wave, you know, up and down, nice, clean.
Yep.
A dirty waveform is sort of all jagged and messy. You can might make out the shape it's meant to be, but it's not clean at all.
Well, it sounds like days of the analog meters are over no matter what, because if you can't get them, what can you do? But you can ask for a smart meter with no communication device attached to it. Can you ask for that?
Some people have had success in having this removed.
Just be a plug-in, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's a module. It's hidden under a cover and things like that.
Because they can still... Well, how do they read the power in the end?
You can do it yourself. You just read the numbers off the front of the meter and then you tell your power company, this is what my meter is saying.
Yeah.
Because that's what exactly used to do. I'm not with them anymore. With PowerShop, where you would buy the units of electricity ahead of time, so prepay power, and you would go and read your own meter, type it into their
website.
I've
done that before.
Yeah. Yep. So it's sort of back to that. And in some ways, it's kind of nice. It's interesting being able to read the numbers. So
you understand things a bit more.
You do, and you're more connected with your use of electricity.
Yeah, that's right. You can almost imagine everything, every unit spinning by in your head as you turn things on.
Yes.
All right, any more items of feedback?
No, that was the last one.
That was a good one.
For this week. Yeah, it was a doozy.
Yeah, let's get on to some news. Notable people, I've got two names here. Ada Lovelace first. Who's Ada Lovelace?
So... today, 209 years ago, the Countess of Lovelace, Lady Ada, was born, and she is typically she is recognized as the first programmer that we ever had.
Oh, okay. Like programming code.
programming. Yes, although many say that this is not actually accurate. Although she was a very clever woman, unfortunately, she only lived to be 36 years old, dying of uterine cancer. She did work with Charles Babbage. He was the guy who created the difference engine and the analytical engine. She was born back in 1815, and it was during the 80s that I can't remember who it was, but they built Charles's difference engine because the engineering didn't exist at the time. He and Lady Ada were around. She even had a language, programming language called Ada, named after her as well. If she had been around in this day and age, I think she would have been recognized for her brilliance much more than back in the day, back in her day, rather.
So when would that have come about, this code writing? Because there were no electronics as such to run any of this on. So was it all kind of theoretical?
And what she probably really did was that she sort of came up more with an algorithm.
Ah, right. Oh, they've been around for a while.
Yeah.
But of course, as long as the universe, but oh, okay, I see. Which can underpin then further work.
Yes, which a machine can then work along.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
Yeah.
But punch cards have been around for a long time, haven't they?
Yes, even around in his age, because they were using things like with weaving looms.
Yeah, that was how they programmed the pattern.
Yeah, yep.
All right, so Ada Lovelace, the passing of Thomas Kurtz. Who's Thomas Kurtz?
He was a Dartmouth College professor who co-created the basic programming language in 1964, and he recently died at the age of 96 on November the 12th.
Yeah.
If you've ever, back in the day, you got a computer magazine and there was code in the back of it and you sat there typing it in on your Commodore 64, BBC Micro or ZX Spectrum, that was the language you were probably typing it in on your machine with. And the reason that BASIC was created, in fact, BASIC actually is an acronym. It stands for Beginner's All-Purpose Symbolic Instruction Code. And this came about because other languages that already existed, such as Fortran and Algol, were too complicated. So it was their goal to simplify things and make it easier for people to get into writing code. And then what happened after that was that a lot of other companies started taking BASIC, and then they took their own interpretation on it. And the idea with BASIC was that it was meant to work on any computer at all, but with the variations that came along, that wasn't always possible.
Okay, so quite the man in that space. And they all seem to live quite long lives, these smart people, though. Maybe not for Steve Jobs, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe not for him, yes.
All right, so that's Thomas Kurtz. Air Canada. Oh, was this going to happen? Might as well be Canada. Air Canada using facial recognition. For what? I probably know the answer, but let's hear it.
They're using it at the gate as an alternative means, as a boarding option, just so you don't have to carry around bits of small bits of paper. And it's now a thing after they've had trials and stuff. They're not the first to be doing this. It's just Air Canada were not quite as quick as some others. Canadians have been slow to adapt biometric processes, and face matching technology is already being used by a number of US airlines, overseas airports, and various government security agencies. 2021, some Delta Airline customers at Atlanta and Detroit airports have been able to check in their bags, pass through security, and board their flight by doing more than smiling at a camera.
Okay. So this is just like a boarding pass. This is not, well, no, you just mentioned without showing passports and things like that. So I guess it has the equivalence of that.
Yeah, you're just showing your face to a camera and a computer decides that yeah, you can go on your flight or no, you can't. In 2023...
computer says yes, computer says no. Well, it used to be a comedy show 25 years ago and here it is.
Little Britain. For real. That was on, yeah.
Yes, it was, yeah.
2023 in Frankfurt, Germany, they've been doing the same sort of thing. And you don't require any physical ID. And
do you have to sign up for it or do you?
I'm not sure how compulsory it is.
They don't just trawl through the internet for a picture that matches the face that's in front of them.
Well, there's no reason why they technically couldn't.
There'll be more of that. Teenager arrested for smishing scam. Smishing, what's smishing?
Smishing is when you have equipment that acts as a cell phone tower and then it's able to send out text messages to phones. Your phone attaches to the fake cell phone tower because it smells like a cell phone tower, looks like a cell phone tower, must be a cell phone tower, but it's not. And with this, able to send out phishing scam messages, typically posing that you're from the bank, that kind of thing, with links that people then click on, follow up through, and the idea is to rob them of money.
So I might have a van.
Yep.
I put this little transmitter in the back.
Yep.
Park in the neighbourhood or the shopping centre or whatever, CBD, with the tinted windows in the back.
Yep.
And I could turn this on and all the cell phones around would pick it up and I could see their numbers?
You can see various forms of ID from the phones because they all have MCID. So you can send messages directly to the phones. You don't need to know the number. You just need to know that it's attached to your tower, your fake one.
Right. And then you've got a direct line of communication with them then.
Yeah. So
if you get one or two falling for it, gee.
Yep, that would be enough. Apparently, they said that there's 120 people that were known to be affected, but they say that no one's actually lost any money. There was one instance on one particular evening where this unit had pumped out about 700 scam text messages in an evening.
Yeah, well, there you go. I won't trust a long wheelbase van parked in a city street for no apparent reason anymore. Especially I know what they're doing in there.
Especially if it's painted black.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I start getting random text messages, I'll know something's up. All right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Smishing. On to our main topic. How real are TV and movie hacks? What do you mean by that?
Well, in a lot of TV shows and movies, they show someone breaking into different computer systems and there's a whole lot of different ways that they go about it. And some of them have elements of reality and some of them are just rolling on the floor laughing.
Right.
Style. Like
the news always putting in the wrong aeroplane for the story.
Yes. So there's one from the TV show NCIS. Where someone's at the computer and someone's trying to stop a hack that's happening in real time. There's pop-ups happening everywhere all over the screen, which is typically unrealistic all by itself.
Yeah, of course. Yep.
Someone comes in the room and goes, oh, I can help you out here. So now there's two of them bashing away on the same keyboard.
Randomly.
Randomly. So when was the last time you successfully shared a computer keyboard with somebody and was productive?
Never.
Yeah,
and just got random hits. Yeah, that's going to get you a long way.
Yes.
Actually, you might make it worse.
Yes, that's hilarious.
I haven't seen that scene, but I can imagine it.
Yes. A lot of movies like to use a 3D graphical interface, which actually has nothing to do with hacking. Now, I hate the word hacking, although everyone does it. A long time ago, people would say cracking and hacking. The difference being that cracking was hacking, but you were doing it with malicious intent. So if you were just modifying.
Oh, so hacking not so bad. Hacking not so bad.
No, if you were hacking code that you had the ability to hack in the sense that you were allowed to, that would be legitimate and that's fine. But if you were doing it, if you were breaking into a system, you were cracking it like you were cracking an egg, then that would be considered illegitimate, illegal, and that was the difference. And what always happens, mainstream media gets involved and then screws it all up.
Yeah, redefines the term.
Yeah, redefines the term. So,
and takes away the specificity of it.
That's the one. So when in the movies and TV shows they have a 3D visualization of hacking going, cracking going on, it's actually a completely inefficient way to work. The better interface is when you are just sitting there typing at a console or terminal. It's just you and the keyboard. And it's also the most efficient way to obtain a lot of data because you can look at the text or the code all at once and extract the information you want really quickly. So some movies that have done this, for example, I can't remember what year it was, in the 2000s, there was Swordfish, and more recently was James Bond Skyfall, where you get to see the code being represented visually. With Skyfall, there's a reference to what's known as polymorphic code, which is code that changes itself. Completely real, polymorphic code is a thing. There is a scene in that movie where you see hexadecimal code, and that is a bit more realistic, like what you see in the real world. Hexadecimal numbering system is base 16, decimal system being base 10, because we've got fingers and thumbs add up to 10. So with hexadecimal, you've got the digits 0 to 9, so that gets you the first 10, and then they use the letters A to F, so F would be 16.
Right.
So, however, in the movie, when they're going through this hex dump, there's a secret message in there called Granborough. And that obviously includes non-hex characters because hexadecimal doesn't have a G, it doesn't have an R or an N,
right.
And other letters like that. So that's not realistic. In another movie, The Italian Job and other ones like it, you see an example where traffic lights are being hacked into, and this is so that they can control the lights as they see fit to create a clear path or block traffic as they want to. This is actually fairly realistic. In 2006, a pair of Los Angeles traffic engineers hacked the traffic lights to intentionally cause gridlock as part of labor protests.
Okay.
And these days, many traffic lights are controlled over the internet and aren't necessarily being protected by passwords. So completely legit.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder who they get in to consult when it comes to movies for, you know, how the level of accuracy that you need to go to. I mean, most people won't have a clue, so that's all right. I mean, I'm thinking of Stanley Kubrick. He was fastidious, wasn't he?
He was very good.
You know.
One of the more realistic ones is from The Matrix Reloaded, which was the second in The Matrix movies. And in that movie, you see Trinity crash her Ducati into a power grid in order to shut it down. And you see her break into the control room, and she's there at a console. And what's fairly accurate about that scene is that she's using a known vulnerability in SSH or secure shell. She's right. exploiting an existing known vulnerability in order to get root access or the highest level of control that you can to break in and shut down the power grid. What's not realistic is that she's using a tool called SSH Nuke. That was just made up. But the concept that she was using, breaking into a system with software that had a known vulnerability at the time, is quite realistic. The only other thing that's probably not terribly realistic is that if you remember the clothing that Trinity would wear, she would have gloves on. People who are actually doing this kind of thing for real have fingerless gloves because it's so hard to type with those kinds of gloves on. So
okay, they hadn't thought that one through.
Yeah.
All right. But there are people who will spot these things.
Yes, there are.
Any more?
Yeah, lots more, actually. So in some movies, They make comments about having to recompile code to achieve optimization. And doing so generates a new binary file, which then the computer has to execute. Now, the time frame that they portray on the movies makes it seem like it's just a few seconds, but it's often not. So depending on what you have to change and then recompile, depending on the equipment you've got, this can take anywhere from a few minutes to a few hours.
Well, that would be the director's cut.
I think there'd be a lot of cutting on, a lot of cutting.
I think we should have this in. Yeah. You know, people need to see how it happens. Yeah,
four hours later.
Okay. I thought you were going to say like weeks or months.
So. No, unless you're using something out of the 80s.
Yeah, maybe. All right, got time for maybe one or two more.
Okay. Well, speaking of the 80s, if you remember the 1983 movie War Games, we see Matthew Broderick's character using a dial-up modem to, from home, connect to the school computer system to alter his grades, which is very typical of 1980s hacking, because all you needed to do was phone up the computer and it would answer, and then there you were. And in that movie, there was a password, but he always knew where the password was written down, was in a hidden drawer, and they did change the password regularly, but he always knew where to look, so he'd always get the same password out.
So that was the vulnerability.
Yeah, a little bit of social engineering there, a little bit too.
Okay.
Okay.
And maybe one other.
Okay. Well, let me see. Okay, here's one. In Jurassic Park, the first one. So as they are trying to restart the park after the security systems got turned off, you see this young girl and her brother get into the control room, and she's sitting down in front of the computer, and she says words like, "I know this. This is a Unix system." And then you see her see her at the computer with the mouse, and she's flying over a 3D representation of the computer's file system, and they're all labeled, and that's actually real. That is a filing system visualization created by SGI. They were computer systems that were in all the movies way back then. And with the computers, it actually did a lot of the rendering of the special effects for the movie. But that visualization tool she's using is real. I've used it myself. It was just more of a proof of concept. No one uses it in reality because it takes so long to fly yourself over a 3D landscape getting to different files and directories. It's completely impractical, but it's cool.
Okay. It does sound cool. All right, well, that was a good Tech Tuesday. I think we've got one more to come before we're done, before the end of the year. Yep. And you're keeping count of the episodes, so we'll...
Just a little bit.
We'll find out what episode that will be, numerically, next week. So thanks, Stephen Sykes, for coming in. We'll see you in a week.
See you then.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.